Are we to start?
Wait till the courtroom is clear. All right, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thomas Keenbaum on behalf of the petitioner Komau Inc. Your Honors, we are petitioning to prevent the enforcement of a board order that we believe is arbitrary and capricious and consequently is not entitled to the deference that this court ordinarily would grant board decisions. We believe that on the key issue, namely, was there implementation on December 22, 2009, as opposed to March 1, 2009, which is what the board contends, which is the dispositive issue in dispute here, the board has simply not connected anything rationally and, in fact, has ignored its own precedents. There are two cases of utmost importance, Century Wine and ABC Automotive, that I will touch on in a moment, that I believe are very much contrary authority to what the board did here. The central issue, as I mentioned, is whether implementation occurred on December 22, 2009. I don't think there can be any dispute that there was impasse and that there was implementation of everything other than the health care plan, which was the most important issue in negotiations. The board has so stipulated, but it reserves the right to argue to you that maybe there was no impasse as to the health care plan, and that consequently there was also no implementation as to the health care plan. Now, first of all, there can be no partial impasse under these circumstances. And that is, of course, according to the board's doctrine, the bottom line case and the RBE electronics case cited and discussed at pages 48 and 49 of our brief. There are narrow exceptions to the doctrine that you have to have overall impasse. Neither one of those is even remotely applicable here, and that would be the economic exigencies situation or a reoccurring event that has to be addressed by the party implementing despite only a partial impasse. So we start with a notion, I believe, and I don't believe there can be any dispute on that, that we have an overall impasse, and the only question being whether there was implementation of the health care plan in December. Now, as the court well knows, if there was implementation, the implementation establishes a new status quo, and that status quo is not disturbed either by subsequent negotiations, which are encouraged to happen, as they apparently happened here, or until there is again an impasse. And we have a second issue on remedy, whether there was not, in fact, again an impasse in March 20 of 2009. But that is, I don't think, an issue. And we've cited, we have not cited, and the case is three, Cox Publishing that established the impact of an implementation. It's 354 NLRB number 24, 2009 decision. And consequently, the subsequent negotiations don't really matter unless there was no implementation of the health care plan. Now, was there implementation? We believe there was. First of all, it was announced quite clearly. The health care plan was detailed in the announcement. The employees were told that it will now be offered. Obviously, necessary steps had to be taken, including the education of the employees as to what this new plan was all about, the opportunity for the employees to sign up, and then the administrative steps that had to be taken so that the administrator could go forward. All these steps had to occur. Everybody knew that, and they happened in January and February. And again, the key is that despite these subsequent negotiations, that moved forward, and the subsequent negotiations do not change that picture unless there was not implementation. Mr. Reuter, the principal witness of the ASW union, testified again and again that he understood there was implementation of the health care plan. And as you know, we contend, and I don't want to go at length into that issue, that according to principally Sixth Circuit authority, the general counsel, in fact, found there was implementation. We think it's very disingenuous for the general counsel's office to contend otherwise, not the lawyer opposing me here, but administrative, Your Honors. But most importantly, the reason implementation occurred is because of two precedents. ABC Automotive, which is discussed at length in our brief, involved a strike where the employer, during the strike, announced a new health care plan. Now, the employees never came back to work, and the employer argued subsequently in response to the 8A5 that there was no implementation. And consequently, what are you talking about, 8A5? Board disagreed and said the moment you announced the new health care plan, despite the fact it never covered any striking employee, there was implementation when you announced. I fail to see how that can be distinguished by the board. All they've said is there was no impasse there. That's correct. But I think, if anything, that goes on my side of the equation rather than theirs. The Century Wine case is perhaps even more compelling. There, the employer announced unilaterally, without impasse, a stock option plan. He announced it, the employer announced it, and down the road, weeks down the road, there was one stock bestowed on the employees, and they had the chance to, at that point, buy stock under the stock purchase plan. When the charge was leveled that this was an implementation unilaterally, the employer responded, the union waived the right to bargain about this because I didn't initially implement, I only implemented later on when they were able to buy the stock or get the benefit of that plan. Consequently, there's waiver due to that intervening period of time. Board disagrees, says again, the moment the stock plan was announced, that is when implementation occurred. And I just submit to the court, I don't think there is a principled way for the board to distinguish these two cases in particular as to whether implementation occurred. And this court will, of course, not grant deference to a board decision that disregards its own precedents. I would add also that the board really doesn't have any expertise in terms of deciding when implementation occurs under these circumstances. The fact that they refer to a dictionary to start with, I think, is a pretty good indication of that. And while they take one definition, I would submit to the court there are many others that cut the other way. For instance, Webster's Unabridged Dictionary, second edition, would define implementation as to put into effect according to or by means of a definite plan or procedure. That's, I would submit, as much a definition favoring us as the one the ALJ decided would favor their side. Healthcare, of course, is an area which they have no expertise in. ERISA is implicated. The new act, Health Care Act, will come in play, requires, in fact, 60 days of preparation. What the board tells us here is you can't implement something when you announce it in the health care field. That is contrary to what ERISA requires and that area of the law. But again,
Did the employee contributions not begin until March 1st?
That is correct, Your Honor. Okay. They had to, as I said, had to hear about the plan to be educated. Then they had to sign up their choice. And then the administrator had to be advised of what the choice was, all plugged into the system. And at that point in time, they could be ready to get the benefit of that new plan.
And is it that it's a self-insured plan?
It is a self-insured plan, Your Honor, yes, administered by the employer. But you know what happens in self-insured plans like this. Blue Cross, in this case, runs it. Okay. It's really an administrator that is, there's no difference except in terms of payment method. The point of no return business that the board deployed is void of rationality. I mean, there is never a point of no return. Employers have been told to reopen plants if they bargain in bad faith, and there's no point of no return. In other words, it just doesn't make any sense. As to the remedy, very briefly, as you know, on March 20, the parties got together. Nothing unlawful had happened other than the effectiveness of the insurance. No bad faith bargaining, nothing. The employer made a lawful demand that the union pay the trailing costs. At that point in time, everybody walked out and said, we will never pay that. And there were no further negotiations. And as the court knows from some submissions that have recently occurred, in fact, down at the end of the year, another union came into the picture because the employees filed a disaffection petition, and this case was tried in November. There were no negotiations between March 20. There was one meeting at which point in time the chief of the union came in and berated everybody for why didn't you agree and I don't like this and you're bad guys. And that was it. That was not bargaining. So at that point in time, there would be another impasse, and the Eagle Express and dependable maintenance cases that we cite and discuss at pages 58 and 59 of our brief would indicate that that is something that would at least limit the remedy significantly to about 10 days or so. The board does not address it at all. They say only it is based on discredited evidence. It is undisputed evidence. There is no dispute as to what didn't happen after the 20th. I see my time is up, unless the court has any questions.
I've just got a couple. What is in effect now? What health care plan is in effect now?
The implemented health care plan, Your Honor.
The company plan.
The subsequent, the union now, the CEA is in place. They negotiated the contract. They adopted as a result of negotiations in the spring of 2009 that agreement which is in place and that health care plan.
Okay. And then what is the status of the decertification petition?
It's a disaffection petition, Your Honor. That resulted in another charge. It resulted in a hearing, an ALJ determination that because of this underlying supposed unfair labor practice, all of that later on led to the disaffection. The board recently on January 3, on the occasion of Member Becker's last act, purported to affirm the ALJ. What happened is they twice wrote, and this is a submission the court has now as a result of a letter submission by the board and our response to it. The board twice made clear that they did not consider, because they didn't know apparently, the CEA's position, that's the successor union. And consequently, the CEA called both the assistant secretary of the board and the local office and apparently was told that this decision has to be withdrawn because they made a mistake, because they did not consider the CEA's position as a respondent. That petition we have submitted to the court in response to counsel's letter who submitted the underlying opinion. He did not, he wasn't aware of those developments, otherwise I'm sure he would have indicated that.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. David Side for the Labor Board. Two initial points. The company acknowledges that any impasse that existed in December of 2008 when it announced the new health care plan ended shortly thereafter. It also acknowledges...
But there was an impasse when it was announced, right? You don't disagree with that.
There's no dispute before this court. Right. That is correct.
Including as to the health care plan.
Right.
That is correct. And the company also acknowledges that when the health care plan actually became effective in March of 2009, that no impasse existed then.
No impasse as to what?
No impasse as to health care as far as the ongoing bargaining. There was no impasse over the ongoing bargaining as of March 1st, 2009.
But there was an impasse as to all the other issues.
Back in December, that is correct.
And there was still an impasse as to all those other issues.
That is correct. There was no additional bargaining as other issues. The only issue that bargaining occurred here was on health care. And on the particular, in the context that any impasse had ended over health care and on the particular facts of this case, the board reasonably found that it was unlawful.
But if the board is wrong, that is, if this was in fact implemented in December during an impasse, it doesn't really make any difference, correct? What was going on in March?
That is correct.
Okay.
And on the particular...
And so what's your answer to, counsel's argument you just heard in the brief that, look, everything in this record, indicates that this thing was implemented on December 22. The last best offer says that. The instructions to the employees say that. The labor negotiator thought that. The board thought that. Everybody thought that.
Your Honor, what the company announced in December was that the health care plan would become effective in March. The union negotiator is under the impression and a mistaken impression that if anything was going to happen, if any change was going to take place, it would have to take place before March. So the union negotiator is under the impression.
What's your answer to the argument of the employer that under the board's view, there's no way that an employer engaged in bargaining over a health care plan can implement a last best offer during an impasse. It just can't happen because the nature of health plans.
Right.
Health plans can't be implemented immediately. In fact, under the new health care law, you just heard him say, you require, 60 days.
I understand the court's concern, the company's concern, but one has to, again, look at the facts of this case.
No, what about my question? I mean, do you agree then that the way the board looks at this, there's no way an employer can try to break an impasse with a last best offer that's a health plan that is announced to be implemented, the board commits to it, but it takes 60 days to make it effective?
Your Honor, one has to look at what happened after that announcement.
No, just tell me the answer to that question. How can an employer under this rule break an impasse with the last best health care plan offer? That's all I want to know.
Your Honor, the impasse breaks in one of two ways. Either it becomes a new term and condition of employment.
No, but under the, let me try it this way. Under the board's view, could an employer break, how would an employer who everybody agrees, in a situation where everybody agrees is an impasse, as which we have here, right?
That's correct,
and they're engaged in negotiations over a health plan. How could an employer implement a last best offer? How would that be done lawfully?
Sure, it would become implemented lawfully if there's no break in it, if there's no break in the impasse. If the employer doesn't do what it does here.
If there's what?
And immediately invite additional negotiations, and the parties immediately return to negotiations on this very specific issue of health care over whether.
And I thought you just agreed with me when I asked you the question at the beginning that if we conclude that if the board is wrong, that is, if this was implemented on December 22, it makes no difference what happened on December 23 and thereafter. Didn't you tell me that?
That's ultimately the question here. If it gets determined that this health care plan, which did not become effective until March, was actually implemented.
So how, can I repeat Judge Tatel's question? How would you have implemented, what would have constituted implementation?
If there was no additional bargaining that happened here.
But you just told Judge Tatel that the bargaining that continued thereafter is not relevant.
Let me rephrase that. One has to consider in context what happens between December 22nd and March.
You just told me it doesn't make any difference. If it was implemented on the 22nd.
And if I misspoke, I apologize. It gets to the bottom line question of was something that actually gets announced in December and it's not effective until several months later.
But my question was if the board's wrong about that, then nothing after December 22 makes any difference, right?
If the board is wrong.
And so the question is, just tell us how. I mean, maybe the answer is a board. Maybe the answer is that the board's view is that an employer can't try to break an impasse with a last best health plan offer anymore, that you just can't do that. Is that the board's position?
No.
No.
Then how
can the employer do it?
I'm not sure I understand the question about breaking a last best offer. There is a last best
without
offer.
Doing what?
I'm not sure if I understand the question about breaking an impasse with a last best offer. The last best offer was at the time the company declares impasse. Thereafter, the company, as though nothing had happened, returns to bargaining. The company invites bargaining. The company is open to substituting the union's health care plan, a plan that's going to save the company a lot of money. You know, this isn't just beneficial to the employees that they wanted to pay health care premiums. It's also beneficial to the company in that health care is something that we're all just simply write out a check per employee for the month and not have to worry about it at all. So there's a mutual benefit here. And it's at the company's invitation here that the parties return to bargaining as though nothing had happened.
But that's not true that nothing had happened, because they were preparing for the effective date. It couldn't be instantaneously implemented.
Your Honor, the initial preparation didn't start until January 7th. By that point, as the board found and the company isn't disputing here, impasse that had existed had already broken. There had already been some very substantive negotiations about substituting the union's health care plan instead of using the company's. So by the time any action takes place on the part of the company, it admits that impasse had already broken at that point. And then it is true that some of the planning did continue, and as a union negotiator had testified, there was concern that in the event that the new plan ended up going into effect. Obviously, employees don't want to be left without health care, and so there were, in some sense, kind of two tracks going on. But at the end of the day, there was no impasse on March 1st when the plan actually went into effect. And what the board did here does make sense, because for an employer in any situation, whether it's health care or something else, to announce that there's an impasse but that something isn't going to actually go into effect until months down the road is in essence allowing the employers that did here to return to bargaining, and then if a better offer comes along or something that's more palatable to it comes along, at the end of the day...
Would you say that if the employer had announced we're increasing wages by 10% and they will appear in the March 1st payroll, that would not be implementation?
If, Your Honor, if there's something where the parties are in dispute over that wage plan and they immediately return to bargaining and the union is wanting additional raises, say more than 10% or whatever it might be, the employer would have the ability to obviously discuss with the union whether or not those wages should
be respected. I'm asking you, in my example, you'd say they hadn't implemented the wage increase even though they announced that it would take effect on March 1st.
If it went into effect, Your Honor, and there's no additional bargaining, and
I've told you the entire hypothetical.
There would be an obligation to put that wage plan into effect in March at that point.
So if they announce it will be in your paychecks on March 1st, but in January there's further discussion about it. The union wants a lower wage for the employees because that's not as high. That was unfair. The employer could not effectuate its promise and put in the increased wage in March?
If the union agrees to have that wage...
No, the union doesn't agree. They're negotiating further.
And if an impasse had broken, then arguably the employer, given that they're still negotiating over a wage plan.
Right, and if they announce on December 1st, we're going to give two wage increases, one on January 1st and one on March 1st. And they give one on January 1st, and then there's more discussion after that. Again, they can be there's no implementation of the second increase?
At that point, if as part of the agreement, there was going to be a two-part plan, and the first part of it...
It's not an agreement. It's an announcement. It's a last best offer announcement. We are going to give January 1st and March 1st.
And if the January 1st went into effect,
yeah.
At that point, that might be something I believe is a Daily News case that gets referred to.
I'm just trying to figure out why that's not why that's a sensible distinction. You could certainly have pulled back if you're negotiating about it after January 1st. You could decide you could agree to give a bigger one or a lower one. I understand that's how the board distinguishes it, but I don't understand how that distinguishes it.
I see that my time is up, but if part of a wage plan was actually went into effect, it would be unlawful to simply stop an additional part of that wage plan from going into effect.
Well, you could call it part of it, or you could call it a new increase. You could call it either thing you want, but it's promised on December 1st, just like this health care plan is promised on December 1st, except neither one takes effect until later.
If the parties were negotiating over wages, and it's just simply a last best offer that is one increase in March, but the parties immediately the next day or a few days later return to bargaining over the wage increase, there could be an agreement to go on with that at least minimum wage increase in the hope of getting more, but that would presumably be a determination by the parties to figure out how to proceed at that point. I'm not sure that the employer would be obligated to proceed with that if there had been an impasse over wages and that impasse had broken.
I don't understand how this is rational when you think about the whole purpose of impasse. The company has to do something about the health care plan. On December 22nd, the company says, we're at an impasse, this is our last best offer, and proceeds to implement it. And why should the company be penalized by, at the same time, you talked about two tracks, at the same time, at least listening to the union? I mean, somebody's got to get the two parties off the dime, and that's what impasse is supposed to do. And it does, and it begins to be implemented, whatever the last best offer is, but at the same time, the company's open to the union still listens to the union. What's wrong with that? I mean, why does that suddenly wipe out the impasse and the last best offer?
I understand the concern, but again, on the facts of this case, to recognize what happened, that once the company declares impasse and the last best offer regarding health care, impasse breaks in one of two ways. Either the negotiations simply resume voluntarily, or there's kind of this economic hammer where the instituted terms become the basis at some point for new negotiations. The negotiations that picked up here were voluntary. This was not as though the parties were negotiating over this health care plan that was going to be in effect in March and say, well, wait a second, under this health care plan, the employees are going to have premiums of $100 to $400. Let's see if there's a way we can reduce that and make some modifications and make it $50 to $350. The negotiations aren't taking place over this new plan that hasn't gone into effect yet. These negotiations are picking up exactly where they left off, on the very fundamental principle of, can we substitute the union's health care plan? And also, as the board found, the company here was not looking to save money off of how much it was going to cost it under the new health care plan going into effect, but looking to save money off of the existing health care plan that was still in effect. And so that's the distinction here. It didn't become negotiations over that. This kind of moved the process forward, and negotiations picked up based on this new health care plan. It's that they picked up just exactly where they left off, and that's the distinction here.
The company relies on two cases, ABC Automotive and Century Wine. What case would you cite that supports the ALJ's point of no return theory? Where did that come from?
Well, I mean, the point of no return, I'm not sure that the board is saying that every case there has to be an absolute point of no return. And again, on the facts of this case, if, for example...
Well, I just ask you, that's what the ALJ said. The ALJ said that the employer the company had not reached a point of no return, right?
Correct.
So where does that come from?
Right, and correct. Where it comes from is the company acknowledging that at any point...
No, is there a case that supports that theory?
No, Your Honor, there's no specific case, okay. but I don't think that the board is adopting a policy here that is saying that there has to be an absolute point of return in every case, just recognizing that in this particular case, the company had acknowledged that at any point it could have continued with the existing health care plan in effect until impasse had been reached over using the union health care plan, and that as far as, you know, there's always an avenue available to an employer that if a party is simply trying to keep negotiations moving without any substance or either surface bargaining or bad faith, whatever it might be, there's always a protection for the employer. And so, again, on the facts of this case, this is not as though the union on February 27th, after 6 weeks of nothing, suddenly said, well, we think we have a new offer. Can we return to the bargaining table? And at that point, all the paperwork is done. Everything is all ready for the health care plan to be implemented within a day or a couple of days. That's not what happened here. And so in the point of no return, again, is being brought in context of the overall facts of this case, not that the board is adopting this hard and fast rule that in every case there has to be a point of no return. And I see that my time is up. If the court would like me to address the two company cases, or the board would simply ask that the...
No, not for me.
Okay, I think we have your honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, why don't you take a couple minutes? And I wish you would address the difference between negotiating or fine-tuning the company plan during those 2 months, in which I think if I understood the board lawyer, that might be acceptable to the board. But because you were negotiating on the old union plan, that makes a difference.
Well, I'm not sure I understand the distinction, Your Honor, but it wasn't the old union plan. That also was going to be a new plan. They had an entirely different plan, which they then changed to be consistent with what everybody else in the company had. The union said, let us administer something. And, Your Honor, you, I thought, made a point that I think is at the core of this. This court decided operating engineers v. NLRB in the fall of 2011, 635 F3rd 1233. And there the court said that unless the board is interpreting the act, the statute, we give particularly little deference to the board. And that was a policy they had just adopted of a disciplinary step. Here, as Your Honor pointed out, we are being penalized for voluntarily talking. If I'd been there, I might have told them not to do that.
What were you what were they voluntarily talking about?
Talking about whether or not it might make sense that this other plan could save more money. I frankly would have advised them, I wasn't there, that look, you don't have somebody else administer it because it may be a good deal on year one, but year two, all of a sudden you get a huge charge because of that. But they thought, hope against hope, that maybe this is a good deal. I would ask the court to look at Joint Appendix 429, because I disagree with the counsel that the employees thought something different than what really was happening. There is an email by Mr. Beagle, the chief negotiator of the company, and he points out, because the union had said, look, why don't we, while we're talking, why don't we just hold up with this March 1 business? And Mr. Beagle, it's not the clearest language in the world, but he says, in essence, no, I'm told by my general counsel that there has to be either impasse or a new agreement, otherwise we're moving ahead. In other words, they have that notice at this point in time if they didn't have it earlier on December 22. And they're told specifically, we have to go ahead. So in effect, what the board is saying to employers like mine, if you implement, don't bargain until you absolutely have to. In other words, until they come to you with a margin change. That is against public policy, at least the policy of the act. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
All right, thank you.